ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. It's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Happy New Pope Day.
Yes.
To all those that celebrate.
White smoke and all that, and go America, huh?
Yeah. 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 Is it the first American
first
Pope?
First ever. Yep.
Went to Villanova. I saw that.
From Chicago.
Big East fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's plugged in.
Our buddy Greg Frank's first tweet about it was, now if he just admits that Villanova isn't a Philadelphia school, he'll win. I was like, okay, great.
Oh, yeah, because he's a Temple guy.
Yeah.
No one knows who Greg Frank is.
I think some people do. He used to work here, but it's fine.
Of our audience.
I just said, I understand what you're meaning, but I just said our buddy Greg Frank.
Yeah, I guess so. 96 plate appearances for Cam Smith. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff today, mm-hmm. but it's an off day, so it's like good days to do this kind of stuff. Bad Take Boulevard coming up a little bit later. Dana Brown stuff, Rocket stuff, football stuff, bunch of stuff mm-hmm. with the Killer Bees today, and we'll see where we go. The audience in the Hive usually takes us in a direction we would never plan for, ever. So we'll see how it goes. But Cam Smith's at 96 plate appearances. This is close enough, and it's a natural time to talk about it because the Astros have the day off. So it feels like the natural time to talk about it. And Cam Smith's going to play tomorrow night probably. He's going to play over the weekend. So by the time we come back on Monday, he's going to be well over 100 plate appearances. So Cam Smith's at 96 plate appearances. Let me throw the numbers at you because everybody loves numbers when it comes to baseball. 96 plate appearances for Cam Smith. 26 games for Cam Smith. Does have 3 homers and 10 ribbies. His slash numbers, .212 batting average, .302 on base, .365 slugging. If you need a former math major to do the math for the OPS, it's at .667. And his OPS plus is at 90. And we know the league average is always rounded to zero. Cam Smith, 96 plate appearances in Blankers. Was it the right decision to have him on the big league club?
I think it was. I think it was the right decision to have him on the big league club because I think sooner rather than later, whether it works out completely this time around or not, this kid's on the fast track to be in the big leagues. And I think it's also because of the fact that with what you were faced with, what your outfield could look like to start the season, and the way he performed in spring training, he seemed like he was the best option for the team at the time, who looked like they had a very much less than outfield. So it hasn't worked out the way everybody, you know, in the Cinderella story would have loved to seen it work out, you know, so far. But at the same time, I still think I support the fact that it was the right decision.
Would it have been a Cinderella story for one of the top prospects in baseball that was the centerpiece of the Kyle Tucker trade to be good?
Yeah, I think it would be because of the fact that it's the situation he's coming into where the expectation was it wouldn't be this year and it would be somewhere down the road where he would be a big leaguer, and the fact that he would have been the right guy at the absolute right time with a team that didn't want to spend any more money that had some issues in the outfield, and then all of a sudden if he just took off, now I think it would have been a Cinderella story.
Doesn't the Cinderella have to be like an underdog?
I don't know how you define it. I just think if it's coming out of nowhere where you didn't expect it for this season, and it's somewhat of a savior to save the day in a spot where you desperately need him, then I think it fits the bill.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, agree to disagree. I wouldn't call a top prospect in baseball and the centerpiece and a first-round draft pick a Cinderella. I would call, like, Mauricio Dubon hitting .300, like, a Cinderella story. Or Chaz McCormick, like, batting fifth on this team. Or Jake Myers could even be, like, an underdog story because somebody who is doubted as an offensive player getting off to a good offensive start for the second year in a row. This isn't anything new. If spring training mattered, Justin Dearden would still be in baseball. Justin Dearden a few years ago, like, knocked the cover off the baseball and had a spring training very similar to Cam Smith. And they decided to keep Corey Jolks over Dearden, and then Dearden didn't have a good minor league season and is now fizzled out and is completely out of baseball. I don't put much merit on spring training numbers. I think that it's overwhelmingly, and yes, we have the benefit of hindsight 2020, and we have the benefit of revisionist history, all of that, but this is the point of the season. We said we were going to have this conversation. I've been biting my tongue. All 96 plate appearances of this. This in no way was the right decision for the Houston Astros on multiple fronts. First, on the Cam Smith front, like, who knows what this does for his development? Like, is he in a better spot for his career because he's had these struggles 96 plate appearances in? Or would he be better crushing double-A, triple-A pitching, climbing the ladder and working his way up? That's hard to tell. That's hard to, like, you know, put a value on or anything like that. But it started to clock on him when he's giving you below-average offensive production. So now you're going to have Cam Smith for less long. Like, he's going to become a free agent sooner than he would have if you kept him down in the minors and allowed him to grow. Secondly, it's been a negative for the team. Like, you mentioned the outfield options, and I agree with you. There weren't many great outfield options at the start of the season now. Jose Altuve moved to the outfield. You know, Yordan Alvarez doesn't play much left field but plays a little bit of left field. But Zach DiZinzo has clearly outplayed Cam Smith. I mentioned the numbers. Cam Smith, 667 OPS, 90 OPS plus. Zach DiZinzo's at 737 with a 110 OPS plus. So 96 plate appearances to Cam Smith would be better suited for Zach DiZinzo. Chaz McCormick hasn't been great, but Chaz McCormick's got on base 34% of the time. Like, is there much of a difference between the production from Cam Smith and Chaz McCormick? No, not really. And not substantial enough to burn a year of club service or potentially stunt his development and growth, which we don't know that is the case. But on both fronts, him being an Astro for a significant period of time, now it's going to be a year less, and also your offense has suffered with Cam Smith in it. So revisionist history, hindsight 2020, jury for me is in. The verdict is in from the jury of Branham. Bad decision by Dana Brown.
Okay. I see it differently for the reasons I gave, but also because of the fact that, look, I had concerns about what this is going to do to him mentally, you know, and confidence-wise. But at the same time, I think that the kid and all checked all the boxes in terms of where he's at maturity-wise, regardless of his age, and I think he'll be fine. I just think that the other good thing in this scenario is DiCenzo has shown that he is ready. He is the guy. He's also learning the outfield, but he looks like you can just plug and play him, and he has been rolling, as you said. So I think in spring training, and I'm with you, and I know that there was everybody charting and saying how many real major league pitchers did he face when he was putting up good numbers, and that was legit that he wasn't facing great major league pitching. But at the same time, I just think that, you know, it was for them. This was, you know, from a Dana perspective, this was the trade that he made, and this was the centerpiece, and this was a chance to get him right there and throw him in. Because, again, I didn't like the other options, but it hasn't turned out. So in revisionist history, was it the wrong decision? It's easy to say.
The DiZinzo, like, I don't know if that's a good thing, though. Like, you said it's a good thing, which, I mean, Zach DiZinzo proving he's a player is a good thing. Agreed on that front. But he should have had all these at-bats. There's no reason that Zach DiZinzo should have almost half of the at-bats that Cam Smith has. So, like, yes, it's good that Zach DiZinzo has, like forced a spot his hand, which, I mean, DiZinzo's been okay. Like, he's been above average. He hasn't been, like, you know, Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth or anything like that. But he's been quite a bit better than Cam Smith. So that's part of my point is that, you know, look, you're not going to lose the season by May 8th. And the Astros, 18-18, they're only 36 games in. They're not even to the quarter post of the season. So I get all of that. But in terms of what gave you your best chance to win baseball games in the first 36, Zach DiZinzo should have Cam Smith's at-bats, and Cam Smith should have Jacob Melton's at-bats for the Spacers.
You know, and I understand that. I just think we didn't know what to expect of DiCenzo. We didn't know that he was going to do what he is now subsequently doing. And look, I think that whether it's right or wrong, I think that they got caught up in the hype train too of everyone's eyes were focused on this kid and Dana, you know, loving the fact that with his reputation as a talent evaluator, this is the guy. And then because he was hitting so well, this is a great story too. And maybe that was right, maybe that wasn't right, maybe that happened or it didn't. In reality, it seems like that also was swaying them, and they felt like, yeah, we're going to do this right now.
Isn't that a negative?
A negative.
Like, isn't that a negative as a general manager point
absolutely.
Of view? Like, here's my darling, and because, like, I made a trade for the darling, we're going
sure.
to rush him to the big leagues, which is going to be counterproductive from a team front in the first 36, 40, 50 games of the year. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, he's going to become a free agent earlier because I needed to dangle my carrot out for everybody to see.
It's absolutely a negative. But I also think that I've seen it before in sports. We know that general managers are going to be highly defensive and protective of guys that they drafted and guys that they're on the record with. And they're going to give them multiple opportunities. So is it the wrong way to think in this case? Sure. But is it possible? I think absolutely.
713-780-ESPN. We'll get the people's thoughts on this, the Hive's thoughts on this. 713-780-3776. Hindsight 2020, 96 plate appearances. We say we're going to have this conversation after 100 plate appearances, but it's an off day, and by the time we get back on the air Monday, he's going to be at about 110. So did they call him up too early? Now that we've had the opportunity to see 100-ish playoff appearances. 713-780-3776. We're on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitter at ESPN 975. Blankers at Pac-Man. Joel Bryan at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD. 97.9 HD2.
Locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN to Dana Brown. Jump the gun by bringing Cam Smith up out of spring training. Remember, he had 5 games above high A ball. Remember, he had 20 plate appearances above high A ball. 713-780-3776. A texter, where is J-Bone? Where in the world is Branham San Diego? 713-780-3776. First person that answers, you can pick up a T-shirt at our next remote. Where in the world is Branham San Diego today? Texter respectfully saying Cinderella's story has to be success out of nowhere. Remember Greenskeeper Caddyshack, former Greenskeeper, about to become the Masters champion. Great movie.
It's Cinderella's
Caddyshack.
Story.
Cinderella story. I like how he plays in the rain. That's the
oh, the gopher.
It's a classic. They don't make movies like they used to.
That was a great flick.
Brian likes all these modern movies about bees and stuff. Todd, the show on the Twitch here, he says that if Todd's the biggest contrarian ever. Like, I saw Todd arguing the DeZinzo side of this the other day, and now he's arguing the Cam Smith side of it today, because Todd the show is not Todd the show. He's Todd the contrarian. But he says if DeZinzo has twice the ABs, it's just as likely his OPS is the same as Cam's now, because when Cam Smith had the same ABs as DeZinzo does now, Cam had a near 800 OPS. That is incorrect. That is patently false. Cam was hitting 200 with a 791 OPS at 45 at-bats. DeZinzo currently has 52 at-bats. Now, Cam Smith did homer twice in that next game. So if you pulled Cam Smith's first 52 at-bats, like DeZinzo has 52 at-bats right now, even with a 2-home-run game that sent his OPS up like 150 points, 200 points, he was still well below what DeZinzo's doing now. He was 232 with a 724 OPS. Cam Smith was after the same amount of at-bats as DeZinzo, which was still less than what DeZinzo's doing now, and that included the fluky 2-home-run game. So there's that aspect of it. There's the other aspects of Cam Smith whiffs a good amount. Like, I mean, DeZinzo whiffs a good amount too. And we heard a lot about this eye of Cam Smith, which he's walking a decent amount, but pitchers are challenging him. 9 walks and 96 plate appearances. DeZinzo has 5 and 57 plate appearances. Gun to your head over the next month, let's say the rest of May.
Okay.
And look, it's easy to do it right now because Jordan Alvarez is out. So, like, both of these guys are going to play and probably play a good amount. Now, when Jordan comes back, I mean, they have Cesar Salazar up. It's not like they have anybody that's, like, you know, banging the door down to be on this big league team. And I looked at some of these AAA numbers today. Oh, man. Sugarland Spacers have to have the worst batting average in the Pacific Coast League. They must, because all their dudes are hitting, like, under the Mendoza line. It's weird. But if you, let's just say the next 50 plate appearances for both Cam Smith and Zach DeZinto, gun to your head, you only survive if you get the answer right. Who has better offensive numbers, DeZinto or Smith?
I mean, I'm going Zach DeZinto, because, I mean, he has more experience. He's shown that he's fully capable of kind of picking up where he left off and kind of progressing. And I think Cam Smith is still raw in a lot of ways. And I think that he's still – and I do believe that more reps in the minor leagues, but just from an outfield perspective, from just getting his confidence back, from seeing more professional pitching, I think it all helps him at this point. I didn't know what to expect when they made this move. I was excited to kind of see how it played out. But I've been a DeZinto guy since before spring's training started, and I thought he could make the actual roster. And then kind of lost in the shuffle of Cam Smith's spring was the fact that DeZinto was pretty good too, and he made the club. And now that he's been put into this lineup on a more consistent basis, he's taking full advantage. At this point, I just need outfielders that can hit. So I think that I would take DeZinto, and I think that, yeah, he's had some mishaps in the outfield. Maybe Cam is starting to pick up the outfield a little bit better. But at the same time, right now, they're all about offense. Their offense sucks. So I would lean to DeZinto, and I think he deserves them.
Yeah, I mean, their offense has been bad, and Cam has not been good. Like, Cam. Now, a lot of these players have not been good. Like, Jose Altuve has an OPS plus of 89. Jordan has an OPS plus of 85. Like, it seems to be a disease in the Astros clubhouse that they can't hit. Texture, if he doesn't bounce back and get to the majors, he's not built to be there in the first place. Okay, I don't disagree with that premise, Texture. I think it's a fair text. The problem here is big picture. Is if Cam Smith does develop and becomes the player we think he is, you're losing a year of that prime because you rushed him to the big leagues now. And look, I think he's going to be better than a 90 OPS plus the rest of the year. But let's just say he's league average the rest of the year. Is it better to have him when he's average versus the rest of baseball? Or is it better to have him a year on the back end whenever he's in his prime and he hopefully develops into the player we think he's going to develop into? Obviously the latter. It's the whole George Springer thing I always get upset about. The Astros should have called up George Springer so he could be on a 95 loss team. Okay, do you want George Springer on a 95 loss team, or do you want him on a team that goes to the ALCS? It's an obvious answer. Do you want Cam Smith an extra year in his prime or not?
Now, is it fair to say that what Dana has liked to do, because I believe I'm with you on what you said, but I think that kind of more the way Dana seems to like to do business is if he is on a trajectory of going upward and really excelling, that he wraps him up before he gets to that last year of the deal.
Now, who's he done that with?
No, well, in Atlanta, they did that. They did that quite frequently.
I have a little bit of a problem with that whole deal, too. He was the assistant general manager. He was not calling the shots. Like, why are we saying Dana Brown does this and Dana Brown does that based on the history of somebody else's general managership in Atlanta? Like, he might do some of the same stuff, but any assistant coach or any assistant general manager is different than their boss.
Sure, but I also think that it's becoming more of a trend across baseball where teams are trying to wrap up guys earlier. So, like I said, I feel the premise that you're putting out there as being it's absolutely legit. But I also think that it was fair to ask the question of the way a lot of teams are operating these days. If he does show that he is going to be that, or he's turning into be that guy, a lot of franchises are going to try and wrap him up before they get to that last year.
Yeah, that's like a whole different conversation, and like I agree with you. Like, it's probably a decision that you make when you bring them up. Like, if you're sitting there, and look, a revisionist history here, it was a bad decision to do it, but if Dana Brown is telling us on opening day that Cam Smith has to be on this team because he's so dang good, he's batting ninth most days. He's batting, like, you had to rush him to the big leagues to bat him in the bottom of the order? What? That doesn't make any sense. Like, and again, revisionist history, we have the benefit of hindsight. But if Dana Brown was telling you on opening day, this kid is so good, he has to be in our starting lineup every single day, why didn't he sign him then? And why didn't he use a long-term contract extension and the promotion to the big leagues as leverage? Sorry, it's a cutthroat business. Hey, Cam Smith, do you want to be a big leaguer? Well, here's this team-friendly 10-year deal we're going to need you to sign.
Yeah, because I think that I think you still at least have to see him to some degree a little bit more.
If you have doubts about giving him a contract, Jeremy, you shouldn't be calling him up on opening day.
But look, again, I understand where you're coming from, but at the same time, I need to see a little bit more before I wrap him up with a 10-year deal. This, you know, we go back to the John Singleton deal. They tried to do that here that one time, and it failed. But even with the Brewers with Churio and guys like that, the younger guys that they're trying to do that, they still want to see what we said we hadn't seen enough of, which was him hitting professional base pitching, you know, across the minor leagues, or to get at least a bigger sample size to see before you commit that kind of long-term money. So I think that he was right in not doing it right then and there, and he's still fully capable of becoming the player that they traded for thinking he would be. I just don't think it had to be right when he got called up.
Yeah, I disagree. I mean, okay. We'll agree to disagree on that. Like, if you're going to have the bravado and the cojones to say this dude that has 5 games, 20 plate appearances above high A ball is so dang good that he has to be called up right now, then you should also have the cojones to say, here's a 10-year deal, and if you don't sign it, you're starting the year in the minors. Like, I think that's what good general managers do. Like, I think that was the whole, like, why did Springer not get called up? Why did John Singleton, Jose Altuve get called up? Because they signed those team-friendly deals, and it sucks, but it's part of the CBA. And if you're a general manager, your job isn't to appease these young players. Your job is to win games and win as many games as for long as possible. So I just believe if you trust your scout that much in a player, if you trust it that much in a player, and you trust it so much that he's starting the year on opening day, whenever, you know, all the 5 games, 20 plate appearances above high A, I think that they're correlated. I think you do this. I think you do them at the same time. And you could also use it as leverage for him to sign a team-friendly deal. Texter, we traded our future with Tucker away. He dang well better become Ken Griffey. Look, no one's saying that. I don't know if that text was sarcastic or what. Yeah. No one's saying that Cam Smith needs to be Ken Griffey. I'm not even putting a bar on what Cam Smith needs to be or what he's going to be. I'm saying, would you rather have an extra year of Cam Smith at his prime or this version of Cam Smith? And if you, like, simply ask it in that way, I think the answer is very obvious.
Yeah, I don't see it from the standpoint of making a commitment like that soon. I see it from...
Well,
it,
I'm not talking extension. I'm not talking extension at the moment. You're the one that brought up extension. I'm not talking extension.
Yeah.
I'm talking about service time.
Okay, and I understand that. I understand that because I understood it was Springer back in the day. So I totally understand it now. But at the same time, I think, you know, at the start of the year, we were talking about where's the offense going to come from. And the main focus was the fact that you might be starting Chaz and Jake every day. And I had a big problem with that. And I think that they were concerned about it. And they showed that they weren't willing to spend any more money. And so this was a chance for them to maybe kind of buck the system a little bit and find a guy that can be plug and play. And it hasn't worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, we are talking about it from like revisionist history. But 96 plate appearances, I don't know how anybody could say it's worked. It hasn't. He's been outproduced by every outfielder with the exception of Chaz McCormick. And even the difference between Chaz and Cam Smith is marginal. It is small. McCormick's getting on base at a way higher clip. Now, the Cam Smith's defense is something that I do want to bring up. It has been a very big positive. I brought it up the other day. But they didn't bring him up to play defense.
Right.
Well, they didn't bring the guy up to play to have a good glove in right field. That wasn't the purpose.
No, like I just said, I mean, the fact is that we were concerned about defense coming into the season, too, and we were wondering if Altuve could play left and if Cam could play right. But now the bigger focus is the fact that all along there was concern about if you're going to get production out of your outfield, but now you're looking at a team, and McTaggart tweeted it out today, when they score 4 or more, they're 12-3. But unfortunately, the fact is that what they normally do is score 3 or less, and they're 3 for like 3 and 16 or whatever it is. But it's like this team's offense sucks, and you were hoping that's the whole reason why you were putting him in right field, and he's been a kind of part of the issue that you're not getting production from anywhere except for guys that maybe you didn't expect to get that kind of production from.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line. Chuck, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Chuck?
What's going on, guys? Joel, I love your opinion. Jeremy, let me ask you this. You're talking about revisionist history and how it's been a mistake. Well, if he started out lights on, like a house on fire, then he still was going to get to free agency at the same time. Now you know whether he's either going to be a big leaguer or not. We're not going to pay him if he's any good. Anyway, right. When it comes to that time, So you might as well take your chance now. And hell, we haven't done this for a while. Let's swing. Let's take a hit. Let's see if we can get it. If not, I understand. Joel's exactly right on this. You didn't have no outfield to begin with. So this was all, like you said, revisionist history. But it doesn't matter if he gets to a point where it's too high, they're not going to give it to him. So that's
Chuck,
how the Astros operate.
Chuck.
Yes.
Would you rather have, yes. would you rather, how good do you think Cam Smith's going to be at some point? Like, what? Just, like, throw out a number or a thought of, like, how good he's going to be.
Well, let me ask you, how good is the number one pick this year going to be in baseball coming up after 96 at-bats? You don't know.
Right.
The bottom line
is
he could light fire. Wait, Jeremy just said. The bottom line is he could catch on fire this year, and even though you lost a year of service, like I said, if he's that good, what are our chances of signing him again with our history?
Chuck, I'll answer your question. I'll answer your question. You didn't answer mine, but I'll answer yours, and then hopefully you'll answer mine. I wouldn't call up the number one pick. That's the point. I wouldn't call up the number one pick until he was ready. What did Cam Smith do that said he was ready? Had a hot spring? Everybody's had a hot spring. Justin Dearden had a hot spring 2 years ago and was out of baseball. So my question to you, how good, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how good do you think Cam Smith's potential? Like how good do you think he will be on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think he's going to be an 8.
Okay, what do you think he is right now currently this year? I agree with you. He has a chance to be an 8. What is he right now this year?
Right now he's got a chance. I think he, as the year goes on, he's got a chance to move up to a high 5 or 6.
Okay, I'll give you 5. Let's easy math. Let's call it a 5. You brought up the point that the Astros won't pay him. I agree with you. If he's good, the Astros won't pay him unless he signs a super team-friendly deal whenever he's very, very young. Let's throw out that possibility. Astros won't pay him whenever he's eligible to be a free agent. I agree with you. So if we have a year wiggle room here, 2025 or 7 years in the future, why would you want the extra wiggle year to be a year when he's a 5 versus a year when he is an 8? Wouldn't you want the extra year of him being great versus being a rookie and like an unknown?
Chuck, are you there?
He lost him. All right, 713-780-ESPN. People have thoughts on this. We'll get to all your thoughts. Revisionist, and yes, we are operating from revisionist history. Like, we'll go back in, like, opening day and what were our thoughts about it then. We can do that, too. But revisionist history as we stand here today. Was Dana Brown wrong in bringing up Cam Smith on opening day after 5 games above high A, 20 plate appearances above high A? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD 97.9 HD2.
The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Was Dana Brown wrong? 713-780-3776. In regards of calling up Cam Smith early, we can all agree it was early, right? Like, I mean, early in the sense of, like, what we traditionally see a player come up. Like, we might disagree on if it was the right decision or the wrong decision, but it was early. It was early in a pro player's career. Very few. Didn't he set a record? Like, wasn't there some sort of record for, like, the fastest to be called up after? No, it couldn't have been a record because there's been players drafted and then played that same major league season. But maybe it was, like, fewest games above a high A or something. It might have been something like that. I think it might have been, like, fewest games above high A to be called up.
Skeens,
something like that.
I mean, pitchers do it more frequently. Right?
Skeens didn't Skeens because did they were protecting them. No, they were protecting Skeens. And plus, the Pirates are like going to manipulate club control.
That's true.
They didn't do his schemes.
But I thought it was right after he got drafted that he spent like half the season in the minors, and then they brought him up at the end of the year or something.
No. He didn't come up the year that he was drafted. Okay. No way. I'm not even sure he pitched again after the year he was drafted. I think they might have just like protected him. But the Pirates aren't going to be the team to do that. Angels did it with one player. I always forget his name. And then you see it every now and then with some relievers. Like, relievers can make the jump pretty quick. And then you saw it quite a bit, like, way back in the old days. You know, Bonnie and Clyde. David Clyde did it.
Yeah.
Dave Winfield did it. And there's been some others, too. But yeah, was Dana Brown wrong in calling Cam Smith up when he did? 713-780-3776. Texter, off subject, but you guys do realize the new Pope graduated from Villanova. We talked about it earlier, yeah, but he said wrap your hand your head around that. It just hit me, though, with that text. This is why Houston, when they played Villanova in the Elite Eight a few years ago, they went 1-for-20 from three. It's because they had the Pope on their side. I didn't know it until now. Now it all makes sense to me.
It's crazy.
They didn't have the Pope. We're in the Final Four, baby.
You know what? And I had it on the TV while I was doing some stuff, you know, working on the stuff on the computer and everything. And I looked up and they said they were trying to minimize that he was the first Pope from the United States. Going, he's not. He's American, but he's really more pro-world than he is Americanized. And then they were trying to define. I said, who cares, man? If he's going to do the job and he's the right man for it, why are we doing that?
You know how people are. I agree with you, but you know how people are. Pete Incalvilla and John Olerud called up earlier than Cam. Okay. I don't remember that the exact figure. I shouldn't have even said it. But there was something, and it might even be like within the last 20 years or something like that, but there was something with him playing like so few games above high A ball. But let's just throw that out, jury. Let's throw that out. It was not well argued. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Ponder, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Ponder? Good to hear from you.
Hey, gentlemen, what's going on? You know, I kind of want to piggyback on that last call a little bit before I get to my point and answer your question a little bit more directly. You know, I envision Cam being a 270 guy, a 25-plus home run a year guy, hopefully an OPS guy of 800 or better. I mean, it's hard to envision anybody being better than that, and we know based on contracts what that takes. And the last caller was correct. If he becomes that statistically on average, no, we're not going to pay him what he deserves across the board. That being said, do you make that decision now and do a San Diego Padre kind of deal or some of these others where you give these kids, you know, nine-year contracts, 10-year contracts, and a dollar amount that we're okay with doing? That being said, why not at a minimum, if you're being optimistic, which is what we pay Dana Brown in this city to do, and he's not proving to be very good at it up to this point, why not offer him an Alex Bregman-style contract, a Yordan Alvarez-style contract, where we're getting a discount, getting a five-year in addition? You don't have to do it now. You don't have to do it next year. But that being said, we're not seeing deals like that. In addition, Jeff Luhnow going into James Click to now, he's not making the same moves that he did, that these guys did, and what they're selecting on the veterans. Brendan Rodgers would be the biggest comp, maybe, and that's a stretch. What these guys did with Charlie Mortons and Garrett Coles and guys like that that had histories but weren't really producing at their maximum output until they got to Houston. Our coaching staff has changed. Our development staff has changed. On top of, we've got this GM that's not doing anything with cheaper talent out there. Yurickson Profar, one that's jumping at the top of my head, and he didn't do anything with it. And I'll hang up and listen on that. And this is my question to this also is, if Lance McCullers comes out, and this is a little bit of a homer coming out of me, if Lance McCullers has some success, do you try to offer him a 3 or 4 year deal? With fear that he's going to get hurt again and give him a significantly less per year value, or do you try to trade him as soon as he shows any signs of positive execution of his game? And that's it, and I'll hang up and listen, guys. Thanks. Love the show.
Thanks, Pod. Appreciate you listening. Look, Jeremy, I know you got a lot on this. I'll just say this. One, on the last part, there's absolutely no way I'm looking at extension for Lance McCullers right now. I'm interested.
Well, he said if he pitches well and stays healthy.
Yeah, I mean, but he's
he put the very specific scenario, like, I mean, because it would take that for this to be a conversation.
Yeah, and he's got, what, two left?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think he's got 26. Two left. I'm still basically,
well, I think he has this and next.
I'm still fine riding with it because of the fact that he wants to be buried in the H, and we'll see if that means staying in the H. But at the same time, that medical history alone tells me I'm not looking to extend him, like, after this and one more, now you're going to go three more, and he's already talked about retirement, whether he was healthy or not. When he was, even if he's healthy, he's talking about leaving the game early. and because of the I'm not doing that. I'm just not. That's just me.
I don't think he carries any value, Ponder. Like, even if he pitches well this year, like, who's trading for him in the offseason? Going into a final year of his deal, age of 32, with the injury history he has, I don't think that he has any trade value, even if he does, like, pitch well the rest of the year. I think he's way too big of a risk. And if he is traded, the only teams that would be trading for him are teams that are desperate for starters, and they feel like they're getting him on a very cheap deal. So you're not really getting anything of return. I think at that point you probably just keep him. Now, as far as signing him, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have pitchers who – I mean, it's different with McCullers because his injuries are 12, 15, 18-month injuries. It's not always the worst thing in the world to have a few pitchers that get dinged up and, like, don't pitch the entire year, because it does kind of give you some roster flexibility and, like, limits the innings for the other guys. So I would need to know the number. Like, I'm not paying him – I mean, what is a discount for Lance McCullers currently making $17 million? Like, I wouldn't want to pay him $10 million.
I mean,
like, that feels high.
And,
like, if he's willing to sign for, like, you know, 21 for three, like, okay. And maybe some performance bonuses in there and stuff like that. I think it is doable. I think it's more likely that they sign some, like, you know, mutually beneficial. Lance wants to stay here. He's still a quality arm because in that scenario, Ponder established he pitches well the rest of the year. I think it actually makes more sense and is more realistic if he pitches well the rest of the year for the Astros at the end of 2026 to find a mutually beneficial, team-friendly deal with performance bonuses than it is to trade him. I don't think anybody in baseball is trading for Lance McCullers.
I don't either. I think that in terms of, like, I think Dana deserves – that's fair criticism. I think that if I was just going to look at the other side of that, I would say, look, at the time that they were bringing in the guys – mostly they were pitchers. I don't know that they were bringing in position players like that. And they were in a really good place in terms of young, quality baseball players on the field besides pitching, to where it's easier to do with pitchers when you can recognize the arm talent and you feel like within your system you have people that can – kind of develop it to the next level, because we know that, you know, it's easy to say that the Garrett Coles and the Charlie Mortons, and you can find those guys easier than the position players that you just kind of pick up like that and then find out that you can turn them into, like, all-star caliber players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a testament of not spending a lot of money on pitching. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're like, I was reading an article this morning at Hobby on The Athletic, and, like, it's behind a paywall, so I don't like giving up too much paywall information, but they had a bunch of different stats basically, but one of the portions of the article was pitchers who have had the biggest regression in stuff, and they like define stuff with velo, RPMs, a bunch of, you know, fancy stuff that's hard to understand, but it's called Stuff Plus, which is basically just a fancy way of saying stuff, which we know what stuff is people who watch baseball. Yusei Kikuchi's one of the worst five pitchers in baseball from last year to this year in their stuff deteriorating, losing stuff. Like, he's been – his stuff this year versus last year when he was with the Astros is drastically worse. Drastically worse. So if you have an arm factory that's turning these mediocre starters into, like, good to, you know, to into good starters, why would you spend big money on starters? Like, go find mediocre starters that you can sign for cheap and then turn them into being really good, as opposed to paying these pitchers $300 million and then they need Tommy John in 2 years.
Right, and I also think, like, he brought it with his example of Rodgers. Rodgers ain't great, but that's kind of like your almost, not best case scenario, absolute best case scenario, but that's at least one where you're getting some positive on the fact that you didn't have to spend much and you found a guy. But it's hard to believe that you're gonna put that on the GM to find a guy hasn't performed at a certain level, and then all of a sudden he's going to turn into, you know, a starting above average or, you know, decent Major League Baseball player.
That's his job, though. It is, but that's how the good general managers are good general managers. They predict the future. And I think Ponder had a peek at our rundown, because we're going to talk about that a little bit later about Dana Brown.
Too much.
Yeah, I can tell. As far as Cam Smith, like, 270, 25 homer, 800 OPS guy, like, I think that's fair. Like, I think that's fine. Like, I think that could be in the ballpark of what Cam Smith turns out to be. I don't think he does it this year. And that's the point. If he's half of that, why would you have him up this year as opposed to getting that 270, 800 OPS, 25-plus homers on the backside? And Ponder's point I agree with, too. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, if you call Cam Smith up on opening day, why aren't you giving him the 9-year contract? And, in fact, again, like, this is rude and all this stuff, but it's playing hardball. Hey, Cam Smith, how much do you want to be a big leaguer? I really want to be a big leaguer, Dana. Well, here's this little contract we're going to need you to sign. If you have that much confidence in the kid, give him the 8-9 year deal. Buy out 3 or 4 years of free agency. Jeff Luhnow did it with Jose Altuve. Jeff Luhnow did it with Alex Bregman. Like, these are what general managers do. And he, like, the James Click did it with Yordan
Click
Alvarez.
Did it with Yordan, yeah.
Dana Brown did it with Christian Javier. 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line. King of Twitch brings up a good point. Let's read his comment on Twitch, and then we'll react on the other side. King says the reason they put Cam in that position up on opening day is because of Tuck getting traded. Astros front office was playing some PR. Is that acceptable? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Todd, the show saying the Astros were doing it to get people in the seats. Astros attendance is down for the second year in a row, for what it's worth. So I don't know how that was a benefit. Would you be okay if Dana Brown called up Cam Smith to, like, show off his shiny new toy? If, like, that was the reasoning? I mean, obviously, it wasn't.
No, we kind of touched on it.
They thought he would perform, but.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on it earlier. Like, I don't believe that that's the right way to go about your job, but I'm also not naive enough to believe that it doesn't happen and that in certain situations that – guys are going to cover their ass. Guys are going to try and do everything in their power to give every guy every opportunity, probably way more than they deserve, so that they can look like they're right rather than wrong or have egg on their face. And it happens throughout all the major sports.
Yeah, texture $1 million per year for McCullers with everything earned in a performance bonus. Let him earn $20 million if he lands a Cy Young. Like, those probably won't be the numbers, but I can actually see something like that being done. Like, I don't think that – I mean, Lance, I don't think wants to be anywhere else.
I agree.
You can have an arm that has a, you know, a decent ceiling and on a cheap term, like a team friendly term. I could actually see something like that happening if Lance wanted to continue pitching and if he's decent. Texter, Bo Smith and DeZinzo are good players, both young. It's been fun to watch them both. It would be nice if they both progress enough for left field and right field. We may have something. We just need to be a little patient with them. Okay, well, that presents a problem because Jose Altuve is your left fielder. Mm-hmm. So they can't occupy your corners if you're at full strength. Now, you can get away with it right now because Jordan's on the IO, almost a DO. Uh-oh. Jordan is going to be your IH. If I can't say DL, I'm not going to say DH. Jordan's going to be your IH if he's healthy. Jose Altuve is going to be your left fielder.
What's the
four
I stand
times
for?
Out of every five games. What?
What's the I stand for in IH? Intentional?
Injured hitter.
I thought intentional hitter might work.
I mean, right now it's more injured than intentional.
Well, that too, yeah.
For Jordan. I don't know. It was a bad joke. No regrets, says Ross. Cam in fire, see if he handles it. Throw Cam in fire, see if he handles it. I mean, you're eventually going to have to throw him in fire. Why not do it when he's a little bit more ready? I don't have a hard time coming to terms on the throw him into fire after five games above high A ball.
I mean, and here's the thing. We talked about this back at the time when it was a possibility, not even when it was decided. We were talking about, is he going to make the roster? Should he make the roster? And weighing the pros and cons. And it came up, and we discussed the fact that I said there are guys that, from a mental aspect, you know, they struggle with if the fact that they get called up, they get their big opportunity, and if they fail, that it can really weigh heavy on them, and you've got to, you know, weigh that and try and judge the makeup and the personality of a kid. And there's no exact science, obviously, but that is definitely a factor that you do have to at least consider. As much as they wanted him on the field and they thought this was the right time, that's something you also have to factor in. And I know we heard from everybody, and they had the players even saying what a mature kid this kid is and everything like that. That's great, but things were all sunshine and rainbows. If they're not now, and then he gets sent down, that's how's he going to handle it?
I don't think that he's been bothered in that front. I really don't. Like, just reading body language.
He hasn't been sent down yet, though.
No, I'm talking about just, like, the struggles.
Oh, no. I think he's handling it because he's still on the roster and he knows that, you know, he's got the support of everybody. But I think if he gets sent down, it's a different story.
Yeah, that would be interesting. He strikes me as the kid that would be okay with it. Like, I don't think that he would, you know, maybe be down for a little bit. But he doesn't strike me as, like, he doesn't have the mentality to, like, I like his mentality.
I do, too.
Like, I don't dislike the kid. I still think highly of him. I still think he's going
as
to be
well.
Good. We're just having the conversation of,
I just think,
should they have called him up when they did? Because it was a huge talking point at the start of the year.
And
I think almost 100 plate appearances in.
You and I have both seen the same thing, and at least from the kid's perspective, I'm not expecting temper tantrums and poutiness and or I'm not going down. He'd probably be the guy that says, I really haven't performed that great, so I understand it, and I'm just going to go and do my best down in the minor leagues. It's
Agreed.
Just that mentally, when the cameras aren't on and the microphones aren't there, is he going to be able to do that, compartmentalize it, go forward from it, and how quickly is it going to happen where he can settle back into being the top prospect in this organization?
Yeah, and I don't think it's, like, inevitable that they're going to send him down either.
I don't either.
Like, I mean, you have the Yordan injury. Like, there's not even a roster decision. Until Yordan comes back. And then they're keeping, like, they called up Cesar Salazar. Yep. Like, there's not really any, now you'd have to go outside of the, you'd have to go outside of the organization. Like, somebody texted us earlier, like, who else would you have kept up at camp? The answer would have been Ben Gamble, probably. Like, maybe John Singleton is a left-handed bat off the bench. I would have, if you would have had me make the decision, you can't pick Cam Smith, who you keeping in that spot? For me, it would have been Ben Gamble, because Ben Gamble gives you some options with a left-handed bat in the outfield. Mm-hmm. You don't have that. Like, you're starting, because Yordan's hurt on the DL, on the down low, you don't have left-handed bats. Like, you can play Caratini at catcher and Yiner the DH, which isn't the best scenario in the world. You're running out all righty lineups against righties who are much better against righties than they are lefties. So the answer to me is Ben Gamble. Like, I would have kept Ben Gamble over Cam Smith. If you give me the opportunity of making the decision with the information I have now, I'm certainly 100% keeping Ben Gamble. At the start of the year, I was excited about Cam Smith, but I also did understand the risk. And also, it's going to be hard for him to be good in this season with his limited experience in pro ball that he has.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that, look, I was excited too. You have to have reservation, though. You have to go, okay, but it's not just surefire, this is the move to be made, because they took it right almost to the bitter end before they made the announcement. And you knew that he hadn't faced all that great of pitching throughout spring training. And so there were reasons, and everything we've talked about with the mental side of it and how does he handle it and all these different things. I do believe that at the end of the day, the kid is a very talented prospect and he's going to be fine over the long haul and for the rest of his career. But I do believe also from an organizational standpoint, they were kind of backed into a corner. And they never want to admit if they weren't willing to spend any more money this season to find a last-minute bat.
I mean, they had Gamble on the roster.
I agree, because I think one of those two left-handed bats, if you wanted to just go Singleton, but the smarter move would have been for outfield purposes that you had a guy that was versatile like Gamble, that it would have been the right move to make. But again... whether it was right or not, I think that they also felt like there's a hype train with this. There's a way to kind of distract everybody from the fact that they're not going to go out and try and look and see if there's anybody else they could bring in. And the fact that outfield that they were considering with Josh in it, I mean, with Jake in it every day with Chaz wasn't great, that this was a way to kind of cover all those bases and then see what your best prospect has. It hasn't worked out.
Here was Lance Zierlein's thoughts on the whole Cam Smith thing before opening day.
Well, if Jeremy Branham says so, I guess Cam Smith is ass. So, boom, there we go. Jeremy Branham's right.
Thanks, Lance. Thank you for calling in and admitting that I was right. 713-780-ESPN. Texter says Tucker and Bregman were miserable in their first stints as big leaguers. Give him some time. Let's have that conversation. Let's really dive into that. Was Dana Brown wrong calling up Cam Smith when he did? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.